to the Wednesday, November 20th, 2019, bye week edition of the Clemson Dubcast. Second bye week edition of the year, of course. On the website at tigerillustrated.com, Paul Strelo has some Wednesday insider notes up. Still chasing a bunch of stories and leads from the big recruiting weekend last weekend. Also, an article I wrote yesterday, sort of examining the emerging softness, I guess, of the Alabama and LSU defenses compared to the typical rock solid showing from Clemson's defense yet again. This bunch in 11 games has allowed 4 non-garbage time touchdowns. That's 3 against North Carolina and then 1 against Boston College when before the score was 17-0 when Boston College scored. Another amazing and truly ridiculous, given what they lost from last year, run for Brent Venables and company. Our title sponsor of the Dubcast from way back in the beginning, August of 2018, Parham Smith and Archenhall Law Firm in downtown Greenville. Blake Smith, a good friend of mine, he's been representing plaintiffs in medical negligence and other personal injury cases for over 15 years. Blake serves on the advisory board for the paralegal program at Greenville Technical College. He recently completed his 10th year as an adjunct pro bono professor at Clemson University, where he teaches sports law. Blake was also featured in a recent Consumer Reports heart surgery risk article. In other words, Blake and everybody else at Parham Smith and Archenhall know what the heck they're doing. Free consultations, 864-990-4581 or online at parhamlaw.com. Our newest podcast sponsor, been with us for a few months now, Black Acre Law Firm, sister law firm of Parham Smith and Archenhall in Greenville. Stuart James is a 1998 Clemson grad, big Clemson fan, just like the Parham Smith and Archenhall family. Black Acre gives you the representation you can depend on when you're on the home stretch, closing on your house, all those documents you're signing, all those technical aspects of it. The last thing you want is for something to go wrong at that point. Black Acre also provides services for wills, powers of attorney, durable, and health care. Don't put yourself and your family in a bad situation by not having these important documents. Call today for a consultation, 864-775-5400, or go to their website, blackacrelawfirm.com. That's B-L-A-C-K-A-C-R-E, lawfirm.com.
Okay, happy 50th birthday to Dabo Swinney. Man, it seems like just yesterday he was this young whippersnapper wide receivers coach. In observance of that, we are going to play some of the sort of raw interviews that we did from our lengthy series in, I think it was late September, early October, sort of giving the floor to a number of people who have been in Dabo's orbit over the years and reflecting on sort of his leadership and what makes him such an extraordinary presence, not just as a college football coach, but just as a person. So we're going to start with clips from 4 of those interviews today, and then we'll have a part 2 of this coming up maybe later this week. But today we will hear from Graham Neff, Thomas Austin, David Wilkins, and Jim Clements. Starting with Graham Neff. Here we go. Enjoy.
My first interaction with Sweeney, and I've told this story a handful of times, and this is just, it's more of a funny ha-ha, but it was a little bit of my welcome to Clemson. So come here, I started in March of 2013, so it'll be 7 years this spring, which is wild in and of itself. March of 2013, first day's a Monday kind of deal. And I got to know Woody, Coach McCorby, kind of through the interview and the transition process. And we had some shared friends and coaches and things like that. So kind of like that Monday morning, he comes over, we're kind of chit-chatting on a couple of things. And he snags me. He's like, hey, let's go to the West End Zone. Football's at the West End Zone. He says, want to introduce you to Dabo. I said, sounds great. So we go over there and we're kind of piling around. We go in Dabo's office, and he was, you can picture his old office, kind of the desk is at the back of the room, and McCorby kind of knocks and we're walking in, and Sweeney's at his desk, he stands up and he's kind of coming over, and so we go and I introduce myself, hey coach, nice to Graham Neff, nice to meet you, and Woody kind of makes the introduction saying, hey Graham, his first day, he's who I was telling you about, he's the new Katie Hill or whatever, that was the role I was taking, I guess, and Sweeney kind of I thought you were maybe a GA I was having, just with my, my, how I look and my, my, I guess, age at the time. So so we were kind of laughing on that of just like, you know, I was coming in with, I guess, a, somewhat of a leadership role. And I thought you were a GA. So we were kind of chit-chatting on that. And then, like most all coaches, it gets into, well, where are you from? What high school did you go to? You know, high school, they always ask what high school you go to. So I'm from Atlanta, Parkview High School. He said, oh, Parkview, you know, I used to recruit Gwinnett County, whatever. And then he gets into Jeff Francoeur. You know, Jeff Francoeur, and I graduated with Frank. So Jeff is a buddy of mine, is a good buddy of mine. And he was actually trying to come up for the Texas A&M game. Something happened with the Braves, his Braves radio stuff or TV stuff. But so Sweeney and Jeff are still really tight at the time and still are. And Jeff and I are too. And so I know Jeff Francoeur and I recruited him, you know, and Jeff obviously signed here. And I guess Sweeney was his lead recruiter. And so we actually walked over and Jeff or Dabo still had a picture of he and Jeff, you know, at some point, whether it was a high school photo or maybe when Jeff was playing with the Braves, I guess, at the time, and Sweeney had maybe caught a game. And so we kind of got on this Jeff Francoeur kind of path. And then Parkview High School is the Panthers, but it's orange and blue, and it's like a paw. It's basically a Clemson replica, like, logo and colors and everything. And so Sweeney was like, hey, well, you already got all the gear you need and all this stuff. You got the orange paws and white paws. So anyway, we were just kind of laughing. That was the intro. But as over the years, as I've gotten, you know, just comments or people ribbing me on, you know, maybe my youthful look, I oftentimes go back to the Sweeney first introduction that even when I first met Dabo, he thought he was, you know, interviewing or meeting a GA candidate, let alone for the, I guess, the role I was coming to Clemson for. So just kind of a funny intro there. But that's like, I think it's a perfect, like a head football coach at a lot of schools, Clemson in particular, like you have all these touch points that people want time or want to meet or want a quick picture, whatever, you know. But like how he prioritizes and makes himself available, just even quick 5-minute intro with me at the time, or if it's a fan or a donor or someone with a story, like, you know, and you were telling the one with the rotary and maybe his mom, and, you know, wasn't planned to be there, didn't need to be there, and it turns into a 45-minute, you know, just evening with that, whatever it may be. And so, like, how he not only prioritizes the time for just those little touch points that he probably doesn't need to do, certainly probably doesn't need to do all of them, but then even how he maximizes that time together and ultimately the connection that's maybe made. To me, it's really unique, and it's so easy probably to be fleeting on those. For you get into the bowels of the season, and gosh, don't have time, or I need to focus, you know. But like, seemingly, he's just like always makes time for that stuff, and I think that's where not only who he is, of course, but where you get into surrounding yourself with folks that help him stay committed or help him prioritize those things. You know, certainly Woody that we talked about, at least in my example. Where Tracy, his brother, certainly helps with a lot of that connection point with the foundation work they do and just the community piece, that's where Dabo has equipped himself with folks in that regard, you know, before we get into, you know, just the on-the-field staff and his staffing organization. But, like, I think those type of things where he knows, and just him as a person, it's very important and prioritizes it, but he makes sure that those that are supporting him in that regard, you know, really, really push and make those connections. So, you know, that's something that's just very different, I think, about him and how he's continued to do that. And that's just foundational to who he is, despite the level of success and his brand and his time, quite frankly, that is continually fleeting. But those little things, my story or countless others that are just continue to be a staple of how he goes about his day to day, are really unique. You know, I think just another area to talk on him that I've learned a lot and have just certainly come to incredibly appreciate is his organizational, his level of organization, which has been written about, is not like a new notion or a new attribute that is groundbreaking to a lot of people. But just furthering the specifics of it, maybe, just his level of detail, like he has in his office, his cabinet drawers are very much, you know, very organized and filed, and he can pull out, if we're talking on a topic, maybe he'll go pull out a folder from back in the day on that, or his continual folder build of that. So that level of detail that he has, And I also remember, too, him moving from the West End Zone to the Reeves facility. And I guess in some regard how he wanted to organize his desk, that there was a file drawer or two that he kind of wanted in the same area, whether it was off to his right or maybe back behind to his left, whatever it was, like a very similar type, layout from office to office, just because of how, I guess, meticulous he is in that organizational level. But two, so that's one thing, and it's probably easy enough to keep good files, you know, but one thing that really strikes me, and this gets into level of organization, but also, you know, leadership and maybe just what it means more so than just the keeping a file, is how he takes notes and what he takes notes on. Obviously, they have a lot of speakers that come to the team in fall camp, or even when we're in coaches' council meetings that Sweeney will come to, or if there's a all-staff meeting, whatever it may be, that he's always taking notes in a journal, on a pad, and he doesn't need to, you know, per se, or he doesn't. It just shows that the he's continuing to learn, or like is admitting that he certainly doesn't have it all figured out and is wanting to continue to grow his own perspective and his own, just the continuing ed of it. So I think when we're sitting in the team sitting in a 45-minute speaker, Ryan Leaf comes, maybe that came this fall or this fall camp, and I wasn't there for that, but I would be certain Sweeney was off to the side and had his journal out, was taking notes. And so now the players, his 120 student athletes, see that. And so what are they absorbing from Ryan Leaf's speech or time? And what are they writing down or not? You know, how are they doing it? Because they see their head coach, who's, you know, at the height of his industry, like sitting there still learning and taking notes. And this is important. And what Ryan Leaf's message is really important. And so, so to me, how that affects his team, his staff, ultimately that see that and probably mimic it or have learned from it. Again, I've certainly learned from it. And just even in administrative meetings that we're in or that Sweeney's in and he's sitting there taking notes, if I'm the other head coaches, I'm like, golly, like, okay, I probably need to be taking notes on this. So I think just some of those small things that have the osmosis effect on those that his colleagues, his staff, his players, on me personally, I'm just like, gosh, you know, kind of never have it all figured out, even to the level of success that he has had in football. So you translate that to whatever job or industry you're in, me in my role, like, gosh, like there's so much more to do or to learn or to remember or to document, whatever it may be. So I think those levels of organization in detail maybe are just our day-to-day, are maybe rote in some regard, but are really strong ingredients into how he is organized in a macro sense, I guess. And then even as you get into like program management, as the head coach, and we have 13 other head coaches for our total of 19 sports, and you talk a lot, like administratively maybe, and not necessarily just here at Clemson, but like, you know, my colleagues around the country, how's that head coach? Are they good to work with? Are they tough to work with? Are they high maintenance? Are they low maintenance? What's important? How that, you know, culture, like all those type of things that, again, administratively we talk about or you think about, and then ultimately how you're evaluating and hiring coaches, et cetera. My point in that background is sometimes or oftentimes maybe the definition of high maintenance is a bad thing. You know, like, oh, high maintenance coach, that's tough to deal with, whatever. Negative connotation. I don't know. I think high maintenance in some regard, in a lot of regards, a high maintenance person, coach, whatever it may be, is a good thing. Like, that's a positive, and maybe I just think about it very differently, but because, like, a high maintenance coach or staff or whatever means that, like, they're pushing for their program, football, whatever other program it may be, or department, marketing, IPTech. So high maintenance is you are pushing and trying to move the envelope and grow resources or do what they're doing because that's really successful kind of deal. And so, like, that's a really good thing. You want a head coach to push and to fight for their program and try to grow resources and best practices and do it differently for their sport. And so high maintenance is a really good thing in that regard. Now, where the negative connotation comes in is the tact. If the approach is tough, or if it's just squeaky wheel, kind of like the approach is where the negative connotation comes in. And so when you have a high push, a very aggressive coach, leader, department head, whatever, really good thing. And then when you marry that with tact, with communication style, with understanding process or chain of command, Coach Dabo talks about chain of command all the time, not as far as, hey, he has to go to Dan and then, you know, like he has relationships throughout the university, but he understands process and how stuff gets done at Clemson or, you know, in most athletic departments. And so, like, his tact is incredible. And so you couple his pushing and continuing to build resources and fight for his program in football with the tact and approach and just awareness of Clemson and leadership and process, now that's where there's really a whole lot of desire to invest from leadership, from Dan, from President Clemens, from our board of trustees. It's when those things aren't aligned, if you're pushing for the wrong things, or if your tact is tough or negative, or you know, it kind of, you get fed up with it, that's where, you know, you get issues with whatever coach or program or department. But when those things are really aligned, they're pushing for the right things, and they're fighting for their program, for Clemson's benefit, and they're doing it in an incredibly appropriate and aligned manner, now that's where you can really make some hay. And so for as much as has been written and talked about, and we live every day, that the alignment at Clemson is great. And again, I say it in that tone, not because it's not true, it's absolutely true, but like it's been so written about. But I think there's behaviors that, because it's not just people, like it starts with people, and from Dabo and Dan and President Clemens and trustees and Chairman Wilkins and Chairman McKissick, Chairman Wilkins, who I guess was the chairman when Dabo first really started going, and now Chairman McKissick, like the people matter and are where you start, and you got to have the right people on the bus in the right seats, but the behaviors are what maintains it. And so, because we can have, and we've had all those people we've talked about for 6 or 7 years now, and the default is to get out of alignment, I think, just by way of human nature or organizational behavior. And so, but there are certain organizational behaviors or people behaviors that keep that alignment right. And so as for Coach Sweeney, from his chair and the support that Clemson football demands and needs, and how he behaves as that head coach, helps keep the desire to have the support and the resources and the investment and the alignment aligned is to me what's also very, very different about him. And so I think through just the success and just the incredible success that he has as a head coach, and then how does that relate to our other 13 coaches or the future coaches that I'll work with or have worked with or that are out there, that his push for the program, but then the tact and the approach with it, that's very unique to Dabo for sure. And I've learned a lot, and I think a lot of our coaches have learned a lot about how to go about that, or seen how he has gone about that.
Now we transition from Graham Neff, the deputy AD, to Thomas Austin, former player under Sweeney and also a former coach under Sweeney, who's now at Georgia State University.
Well, I mean, I remember when I was getting recruited, I remember coming to a 3-day camp in the summer when Tommy Bowden was the head coach, you know, and Billy Napier was GA, and Brad Scott was the O-line coach, and Coach Sweeney was the lighthouse coach. And Grisham must have come to the first session, and I was there for the second session. And so he's telling about this bad white boy who could run and jump and play and all this stuff. And Rendrick Taylor was there too, because Coach Sweeney was, you know, spent a lot of time with Rendrick. He was the guy who was trying to, you know, he was trying to get committed at that time. But so I always remember my first, you know, kind of introduction to Coach Sweeney was just his, you know, how much of a recruiter he was, and just his, I mean, just like he is now. He's just intense and thorough and detailed. And once he kind of sinked his teeth into somebody, he wasn't going to let him go. And then as a player, I remember that he and Kathleen were very, very intentional with their position group of wide receivers, and then with the other guys who recruited. like Bobby Hutchinson, for instance, you know, was an offensive lineman that he recruited. And so, you know, Sweeney and Kathleen were very intentional about loving their players well, you know, and I remember thinking that was pretty neat as a player. And so I didn't really I wasn't super close with Coach Sweeney when he got the head job. I mean, I had some interactions with him, you know, but I had a great relationship with Brad Scott, you know, and I know Brad had been a head coach. And so when everything happened with Coach Bowden, you know, it was kind of a whirlwind. And I think I kind of assumed it would be Brad Scott, honestly. And so Coach Sweeney took over, you know, and I remember just early on, he always came in with those two sides about belief and it can be done, you know, and I remember even as a senior who had bought in and was a leader on the team, I remember thinking, why does it matter if you believe either you're better than that team you're playing or you're not? Like, even as my senior year in 2009, his first full season, I didn't quite understand the power of belief and positive thinking. And I think those are a couple of things that Coach Sweeney would say are kind of, you know, foundational principles of the program, you know. And so I remember, you know, I thought we had a good team in 2009 and we had a lot of guys that a lot of good, strong leadership and guys that played in the NFL afterwards. And so we had a good year there. And I felt like we kind of took a step in the right direction and, you know, went to the AC championship after starting off rough, you know, 2-3 or 3-3, and then kind of went on a streak there at the end of the season. And then I remember watching Clemson after I left. And when, for me, I felt like, I mean, Coach Sweeney would say, I've heard him tell this story many times, that he felt like the culture had started to take root after that 2010 season and losing to South Florida in the Meineke Car Care Bowl, and yet a guy like, I think it was DeAndre McDaniel, stood up and said, hey guys, you know, we're going the right direction. Y'all got to buy into this thing. You know, it's gonna happen. And that was when Coach Sweeney felt like the culture had taken root. But as an outsider at that point, I felt like it happened when Clemson beat LSU. I remember thinking, man, that we're taking it to the next step. And then going back, it was fun for me to be gone for 5 years and then to go back as a GA, you know, for that first bowl game against Oklahoma in 14 and then full-time in January 15. And to see that Coach Sweeney hadn't changed, his process hadn't changed, his belief in his players and his development of his coaching staff, none of that had changed. And then Kathleen hadn't changed. I mean, Kathleen was great. Mark and I were married in college, so we're the only married couple on the team, and Kathleen was great to Margaret when she was position coach, and she's been great to Margaret, you know, when we went back as GAs, you know. And so just really need to see them leverage their influence for the right reasons. So no, not surprising to me at all that Clemson's having the success that it is, you know. One of the things I think Coach Sweeney has done a tremendous job of, when he got the job, he acknowledged, okay, I'm a young head coach. I need to surround myself with some wisdom, you know. So he went and hired Woody McCorvey. He went and hired Jeff Davis. And then he's made tremendous hires at offense and defensive coordinators, obviously. And so I think he saw his, you know, the need to do that. And where he is now is he's let his coordinators, he's given them a lot of control, and he's involved, but he lets those guys make a lot of decisions and allows him to kind of handle the big picture, kind of, you know, vision stuff, big goal stuff. And that's, I think, what he's so good at. Yeah, I mean, I remember losing to Maryland, and you know, that was a kind of a gut punching type of game that we thought we were better than they were. I thought we had a chance to be a good team, and then we lost to them. We were 2-3, and yeah, I think that was probably. I think it's always easier when someone's hired from so within. I think it's probably easier to be critical, you know, than when you kind of go out and hire someone from outside. So I think that's probably accurate. I think And I mean, you know, understandably so. He was a young coach that had never been a coordinator, and a lot of people outside didn't know who he was. Obviously, you know, Terry Don saw something in him as a young coach and knew that would be a good hire. You know, when he took over during the middle of the season 2008, he came in with a bunch of things he wanted to do. But in the middle of the season, there's almost only so much you can institute. And he shared his – last year maybe, he shared his note. He has his notes from, like, the first meeting in 2009 when we came back in January. And the stuff that he said in that meeting is the same stuff that he says now, you know, which I thought was – so I think when the first time I remember him kind of casting a clear vision was probably in January of 2009. And then, you know, as with anything, I've learned this as a position coach down here, is it takes time and consistency for young college student athletes to fully buy into that. You know, a lot of people say good stuff, but, you know, when it hits the fan or you lose a close game, you know, are you still living it, or do you still mean it? You know, and those are things that young college players watch. And Coach Sweeney's been a model of consistency when it comes to those things.
I remember somebody told me that at some point last season, you know, when Alabama is tearing everybody apart and you guys are kind of finding your way, finding yourselves, that Dabo told the team, "You guys are the best team in the country. You just don't realize it yet." Do you remember him saying that at all?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He said it all the time. I mean, he really did. And he told us as coaches, "This is the best team I've ever coached on paper, you know, and we deserve to do everything we can do as coaches to put them in a position to be successful." I remember that. And I think one thing Coach Sweeney's always balanced well is being encouraging and being confident but also being realistic. You know, he would start every Monday morning with, "Here's some highlights of the game, and here's some lowlights of the game. Here's some guys with great effort. Here's some guys that aren't doing great effort. They're not all in. Here are the guys that are all in." And, you know, so he's going to defend every player and coach outside that building. But behind closed doors, he's going to make sure that every kid and coach in that building knows that you're going to be held to a high standard and we're all in this thing together. And so, I mean, he would tell guys, he'd say, "I vote every week that we're the best team in the country." And guys believed it, you know, and they bought into that. And so I think he's done a good job of not letting external noise get, you know, kind of find its way inside, which is hard in this day and age to do that. But I think he does a good job of isolating it.
When y'all guys went to San Jose thinking y'all were going to win convincingly?
You know, I had watched both sides of the ball because I did crossover reports with the defense, and I felt really good about our chances offensively, and I knew if we blocked them up front that they were going to have a hard time defending us on the second level and in space, and so we were confident offensively. I also watched their offense and thought, man, this is a really good offense, and was the best passing team we'd seen. But I remember in the days leading up to it, the defensive support staff were highly confident in their matchups. And so going into that game, I think all the guys were very, very confident in that game. And you can see it in the outcome, you know, because I think one thing that Bama's been very good at they've been very good in the trenches, and Clemson is there now. They've been there for the last couple of years, and they can match their physicality. And so at no point did the offensive defense line ever feel overwhelmed, you know, by Alabama. And so I think that first time we went and played Alabama out in Arizona, you know, was not many people thought we had a chance. And actually we had opportunities to win that game. And I think it was that guys came back knowing that, hey, we can play with Bama. This isn't overwhelming. You know, we deserve to be here, and you know, and
and that you've seen that last couple of years. Another thing that's what he's done a good job of is he's going to be positive and encouraging and create confidence within the organization. But he was going to find whatever he could from external sources, you know, to create this kind of us against the world chip mentality type, you know, chip on our shoulders, which, you know, in 15 and 16, I mean, definitely in 15, I mean, every big game we played in, we were the underdog, you know, Notre Dame, Alabama, you know, I mean, everyone we played, we were the underdog. And so, you know, now it gets harder and harder to create that. And that's one thing that, when possible, he'll create that chip on the shoulder. And if anyone on that team is saying anything, the Texas A&M offensive lineman who guaranteed a win, well, I guarantee you he was reading that on 15. You know, and he's going to create that chip on the shoulder type mentality whenever he can. But he does a great job of balancing it and saying, but it's not about Texas A&M. It's not about Alabama. It's all about Clemson. And that really changed. I mean, that was always the talk. But I remember after we lost in 15 national championship, and there were 3 to 5 plays that we felt like we if we would have made, you know, things that boneheaded stuff that, you know, Alabama just didn't make mistakes. We made 3 or 5 costly mistakes, the return, not covering a guy out of the backfield, a fumbled mesh, you know, things like that. And that was the next year. You know, that back hallway at the West End Zone used to have the schedule going up the steps. Well, he changed it that next year. Instead of having the team's logo, it was Clemson Paws, and that's what they use now. You know, it's not about who we play, it's us. You know, we play Clemson 12 times a year, you know, and that's the standard. So whether you beat a team by 3 or 30, there are always things that you can find that need to be improved on. And so just like after a game, no matter how good or bad they play, they're going to get in that locker room, they're going to dance, they're going to enjoy the win, because it's hard to win. And he's never going to apologize about a win. Have fun, enjoy it. But then that next day, you know, you got to flush it. And all right, let's be honest with ourselves. What did we do well? What did we not do well? You know, what do we need to do to move on from this point forward? So I think as coaches, you have to balance that out, you know, for your players. Obviously, there are a ton of things from a football standpoint, from there's a ton of things that I've already felt myself, you know, Jay Guillermo, you know, is our GA down here, and he and I laugh all the time because one of us will use a Sweeney quote. Like, golly, I can't believe I just used it, but that's true. You know, whatever it is, you know, stuff that when you hear it every day, you can kind of make light of it. And now that you're gone, you realize, oh yeah, that's true. I think the biggest thing that I have taken away from my time at Clemson, from Coach Sweeney, is just his unfailing and unbelief in the individual player and coach. Like, Coach Sweeney always sees the good and the potential in every player, and he never gives up on anybody. Jay Guillermo's a prime example of that. That, you know, Jay's been outspoken about his struggles with depression and with some substance stuff, and that he's almost stepped away from football. And most coaches would have said, all right, man, we'll see you. You know, go ahead, go get healthy. You know, we wish you the best. And Coach Sweeney said, we're with you in this. We want you to go get healthy. And you know what? You may never play football again. That's absolutely fine. But we want you to get healthy and make that decision from a place of strength, not of a place of weakness. And so, you know, and then Jay came back and was a captain on the team and ended up being obviously starting center on the national championship team. And so, but he would have done that whether Jay was a starter or not, whether he would ever play or not. And so I think that's one thing that I've probably, my biggest takeaway is just never giving up on a kid and always believing in understanding what the kid is capable of if he has the right environment, you know. And that's what Coach Sweeney said all the time, you know, good wood will burn once it gets lit. And so our job as coaches is to make sure that you create an environment for that good wood to light, you know. And so I think that's probably my biggest takeaway.
Big supporter of the Clemson Dubcast is Harris Flooring America. Based in Anderson, South Carolina, Harris Flooring has been instrumental in a lot of the facilities transformation you've seen on Clemson's campus lately. From the Allen Reeves Center to the McFadden Building to Memorial Stadium to the Neary Center, family owned and operated since 1947, the owner, Scott Junkins, big Clemson guy. Harris Flooring is just as good inside the home and the residential realm as they are with the larger scale commercial stuff. Give them a call, 864-642-6183, or online at flooringamerica-anderson.com. Over the year we've been doing the Dubcast, we've developed a great relationship with the folks over at the Abernathy Boutique Hotel. In addition to being a great meeting spot for our interviews we conduct with local personalities, it's also a fantastic place to stay. The Abernathy is rolling out a loyalty savings program for 2019. After your third stay, you'll automatically be rewarded with an exclusive offer. It can be applied to future reservations for the remainder of the year. 15% off rooms, 15% off food and beverage at Taps Bar and Cafe. Learn more at theabernathy.com. Now we transition to former Board of Trustees Chairman David Wilkins and current still member of the Board of Trustees. All right, here we go.
I mean, everything about Dabo has been said, really.
Right.
I mean, you know, so I'm pretty convinced I'm not going to say anything new, but I am a huge fan, and I really believe he's been, and I've used the words I've heard before, I mean, he's been transformative. I mean, he's been wonderful for Clemson football, but he also has been transformative for Clemson University. He in some ways become the face of Clemson University in some ways. And I sort of call it the Dabo difference. I mean, we're a national brand now, and he's not the only reason, but he's a major reason why we're a national brand. We've all said it 100 times. I mean, Clemson University is a lot of things, but Clemson athletics, and in particular Clemson football, is the front porch. So that's the thing that most people pay attention to first before they learn all the other attributes about Clemson. And he's put us on the map. And not only just, it's not the win, just the way he's gone about it, you know. My grandchildren, my children played high school football. My sons did. My grandchildren probably will never play college football. But I guarantee if we had a son or grandson going to that could play college football, Susan Wilkins wouldn't let him go to any other school because she'd want the influence of Dabo Swinney. So it's way beyond the wins. It's the culture. It's the integrity. The character. Just the example he sets for everybody. It's pretty incredible. And now you hear words like the Clemson way. Let's do it the Clemson way. Or let's use the Dabo model. So he's transformed not only sort of our university, but he's, in a sense, transformed college football. Because if I was a new coach somewhere, I'd want to go camp out at Clemson University and learn how it's done. It's pretty incredible that we're getting to watch this firsthand. And again, he doesn't deserve all the credit, but he deserves a lot of the credit. And it starts at the top, and now the coaches and the assistant coaches and the players all have bought into that, so they're all sort of disciples of this, you know? And it's really inspirational, but Clemson University is really sort of leading the way this way. You could do things right and still be a champion, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a famous saying by Andrew Jackson. It says, one man with courage makes a majority. And you could transfer that over to Dabo Swinney and say one man with conviction and a vision can make a difference to an entire university. And I think he's done that. We're fortunate to have, I think, the best college football coach in the country. I personally think we got the best AD in the country, and I personally think we have the best college president in the country. So it's not just Dabo Swinney, but he's a major part of it. And it's a team, too. And the fact that the administration gets along so well with athletics, and Board of Trustees bought into this, It's a unique situation that really is a model for other universities. This is the way we ought to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and character counts, integrity counts, and if you can't be part of that culture, you're not. You don't need to come here. His enthusiasm of life is contagious. I mean, it's incredible. People like to be around him and they follow him. And his influence on so many these young kids coming through. He's not only influence on the players. He's influence on the people that read the articles about him. I think. You know, I think his influence go way beyond the boundaries of Clemson University. I think he has a positive influence throughout our country. And that'll just continue because he's such a good example of how you can do it. So I think he's changed not only the culture of Clemson athletics, but probably the culture of the way people want to build programs in football. Now. I don't think about. I had an individual yesterday tell me. He said Dabo Swinney ran for governor, he'd win. Somebody I was with, a client yesterday, said Dabo, and he's not a football fan, and he's not a Clemson graduate. He said Dabo Swinney. You think he'd ever run for president? I said, I think he'd go concentrate on football. He said, well, if he ever ran for governor, he'd win hands down. I said, well, my sense is he's going to concentrate on football. But look, his character, his leadership skills, they're transformative. So you could take him to politics, you could take him to business, you could take him to a boardroom, you could take him to CEO. That's transferable. Those skills are transferable. They're not just in a football coach's office. So absolutely, he'd be a success whatever he did. I mean, there's some skills that are transferable, and he's got them.
Going back to the when he gave his speech to the State House.
Yeah, standing ovation three times, like it was.
Yeah. I mean,
and a lot of hard, diehard Carolina fans standing up clapping.
Can you, I guess, recreate that, what that was like?
Well, he's done it twice now.
Yeah.
But he's a leader and he's inspirational. And, you know, I was on the floor because I still have floor privileges. And so I see all these diehard Carolina fans just falling all over themselves to shake his hand when he walks out. I mean, he inspired them. He talked about, you know, about if he could get all the Democrats and Republicans together and have 2-a-days with them, he'd have them working together in a day or two pretty strongly. There was nobody in there that did not enjoy his remarks and support what he said. You know, he crossed all party lines very quickly. And even the diehard Carolina fans, they're more Carolina fans than Clemson fans in the legislature, even they were applauding. And in typical Dabo fashion, he got them and said, they told me I had 10 minutes to talk. And, you know, 45 minutes later, nobody wanted him to quit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I mean, nobody looked at the watch and said, it's going on a little long, you know? Everybody was saying, give me some more.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just, he's special. And then, you know, the... the guy's a real deal, and he doesn't wear his faith necessarily on his sleeve, but he's certainly not ashamed of it. And that's pretty special, you know. And he's got a great team, and I don't want to stop. the Dabo difference has made a difference, no question about it.
If you run a business that conducts credit card transactions with customers, you got to learn about Tandem Payment. Credit Card Processing Company has offices throughout the Southeast, but the one in Greenville in the upstate, headed up by a 2005 Clemson grad, Tandem's technology allows business owners to offset their credit card processing costs by applying a small customer service charge to each sale they make. Tandem has an A+ rating with the Better Business Bureau and was awarded the Better Business Integrity Award in 2013. Check them out at TandemPayment.com. Quick word about Uptown Realty LLC, headed up by Patrick Enzer, former sports writer who decided to get into the real estate game. Uptown Realty, locally owned and operated out of Sumter, but they serve the Eastern Midlands and PD area with the buying and selling of homes, commercial properties, and land. They also offer affordable new housing in the mid-130,000s from a local custom builder. Patrick is the sole owner and broker in charge. Grew up in Anderson, going to Clemson games, been in Sumter for 15 years, loyal Tiger Illustrated subscriber, loyal Dubcast listener. Website is uptownrealtysc.com. And we close with current Clemson University President Jim Clements. Here we go.
And I remember sitting back in my office in Maryland, and you know my family ties to Clemson go back to 1981. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading when Dabo got named as head coach. I'm like, man, that's a bold move. That's like a double jump. This guy must be special, or somebody must be making a pretty bold, crazy move.
Yeah.
Turned out it was a brilliant move on Terry Don's part, on Jim Barker's part, and on the Board of Trustees' part. And I think here you've got a board and a leadership team. If they say they got you, they have you, because they saw something special in Dabo. And I don't know if you were at my press conference when I was first announced, mm-hmm. November the 11th, 2013, 6 years ago, that I was coming here. Dabo was there. And I made a comment in the during my speech. I said, hey, look, Coach, you know, we won a national championship in 1981. And it's not going to be too many more years till we win several together.
Mm.
And the goal was to make sure we won. And he was so close. And I had heard over those years that he was that special. And Larry, as you know, since I've been here, I think we've given him, what, 4 new contracts in 6 years? Because I do believe he's the best in the business. And I believe that not just because of his record. It's more than that. And it needs to be more than that in college athletics. I've been in the locker room after games. I've been in a locker room before games, and his message is much more than football, and it's powerful, and that's what I think college sports should be. So I think he's an example for others, and I'm glad he's here. So there are times, you know, where you know his phone rings, and it's always just say, hey, you know, if you ever did leave, you know, you go 11-2 somewhere, they may not love you as much. We'll still love you, and we'll still value and appreciate you, and that's true, mm-hmm. and that's Clemson, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I remember, Larry, right when I first started, you know, we had lost 5 in a row to our rivals down the street. And, you know, part of it was to make sure, let's make sure we turn that. And we've had a pretty good run ever since. But it goes so much more that, you know, if Femby's like, you know, today's the biggest game we're going to play. Win the game. Win the ACC. Win the state championship. Win the ACC. Win the get to the college football playoff. He's got a system that's it's good.
Yeah.
But his heart is what differentiates him.
How so?
Look at how he loves his players. He really does. I mean, he cares about them as people more than as a student athlete on the field. You know, in a locker room, and you know, I'll share some stories with you where his message might be, you know, Larry, you made a great tackle, and Jim, you had 100 yards, and Trevor, you had a great game, and he'll put up some stats, and everybody will cheer for the players. But, man, he instantly turns it into a message of character and integrity and doing what's right, representing the university well. He teaches so many more things than how to win a football game. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. What was your first introduction to him? Was it that press conference or before?
Yeah, I went right after. You know, there's a lot of people waiting to meet me and my family, and he was there with Coach Brownell, mm-hmm. and I went over and talked to him because I didn't know him. I think I had met him maybe once or twice previously, probably once, to be honest. But I knew a lot about him, and I knew a lot of people who knew him. And I wanted to make sure that we could help him get the resources he needed to win a national championship. Building that new facility helps him to recruit and lets him focus on then what he needs to do on the field, developing these student athletes and in the classroom and the locker room. So, but my job is to make sure that, you know, I could help him succeed and be his teammate. Because after that press conference, I'm like, all right, Coach, what's it going to take? Let's go get it. We're close. Yeah. And, you know, my first assignment here, when I got here, I started at the end of 2013. So I moved down maybe the day after Christmas 2013. And then a couple days later, flew to Miami for the Orange Bowl against Ohio State, which was a total beat, one of the best college football games I've ever seen. Total beatdown, incredible game. But after that press conference, same thing. I'm like, all right, what's it going to take? We're close. You know, what can I do to help you get to where we need to be? So it was a very similar kind of discussion. And, you know, Dabo's great about, you know, talking to Dan first about here's what he wanted for facilities. Dan and Dabo and I talked about it, and the whole thing was just we got to go raise the money because it's all private money. Mm-hmm. There's no state money. There's no student fees. It's all private money. And my view is, if that's what we need, then let's go get it, which we did. We raised a lot of money for that. So we had a lot of generous people step up. But when Dabo, there's no idea for me that's too big, to tell you the truth. When he sketched it out, one of my statements to him and Thad was, look, if we're going to do it, put everything in you want it in now, because I don't want to redo it or expand it. If we're going to go, let's go. And let's make it the biggest, the best. And if we're going to make it, let's make it the best in the country. Let it be the facility that everybody else in the country said, man, why didn't we do that? And to be honest, I went through something similar at West Virginia when we were building a basketball facility for Bob Huggins. And the view was like, man, if we're going to do it, I want it to be the best in the country. I don't want to do second rate or B minus or 5 years later say, man, why didn't we do this? Why didn't we do this? So, you know, it was, if we're going to build it, build everything in it you could ever dream of. Let's make it as special as it could be and let it help transform the program and take it to the next level. So Thad and Dabo went at it. You know, they didn't hold back.
Yeah.
You've been through it. It's special. Now everybody else wants what we have. Jeff Scott jokingly used to tell me he had a spreadsheet of all the ones that they brought to see me and all the ones we got, and then we just stopped. There's too many. But, you know, I don't know lots of them, but I like building the friendships. But when it comes right down to it, they're coming because of the coach. And, Larry, one of the things I've told a couple of the parents, I said, hey, look, if my son, I love my son, so it's not a knock on my son in any way, shape, or form, so be careful, because I think he's the best director of on-campus recruiting in the country. I said, I tell some parents, if my son could play at the level your son could play, I don't care where Dabo is. If he's coaching in Alaska, send your son to Alaska. I think he's honestly that good. And and I tell the parents, your kid's going to graduate. I will give him a diploma. Dabo's going to do a great job. We're going to win a lot of football games, but they will graduate and they'll have a successful life. That's the key. But Dabo, he's the top recruiter. I'm just on the support team.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that have sat right in that chair or at my house that we've locked in, from Christian Wilkins to Trevor to dozens and dozens in between. The alignment here is unbelievable. And again, it goes way beyond my time. Jim Parker had a lot to do with that. Terry Don had a lot to do with that. I've been in higher ed for 31 years. What we have here is nothing like anywhere else. In many places, the basketball coach, football coach don't like each other. The basketball coach won't talk to the AD or the president, and the football coach don't like each other. There's some weird dynamics and a lot of egos, which here I don't think you have a lot of egos. I think you just have some pretty good people that are on an important mission about changing lives. And so we have unbelievable alignment. And I think the faculty who here do a phenomenal and incredible job realize the value that Dabo brings. And I'll tell you two stories. A couple years ago, before we were playing Florida State, in this office, there were several writers of some, might have been Sports Illustrated. I don't remember which ones they were. But we were just giving Dabo another new contract. Mm-hmm. And they said, what do you have to say about this new contract to your faculty? And I said, well, understand that tomorrow we play Florida State. But in my suite, there'll be 15 major CEOs from major corporations around the country and around the world who are coming to watch our football team, but they're giving money to engineering, they're giving money to business, they're giving money to health sciences, they're giving money to education. It goes way beyond football. And if we're all on the same page, moving forward together, we all win. So some of my speeches, and I give way too many of them, a couple years ago when we won the national championship in 2016, in my speeches, I'd say, if you think of Clemson and the number four, and there'll be 500 people in the room, if you think of Clemson number four, what do you think? And everybody yelled, Deshaun Watson. And I'll say, he's the greatest. He's also a great human, and he became very close with my family and with my son and with my daughter, Grace, and with Beth, and with Hannah, because I graduated together, and with Maggie. But I'll say, he's the best. The best great person off the field. By the way, I liked his press conference. Did you see that piece? Yeah, it was pretty cool. Great person on the field, great person off the field. But I said, let me give you another Clemson in number four. The most Goldwater scholars you can have a year is four. Goldwater scholar is a top science award in the country that a student can win. The most you can ever get is four. That year we had 4. And I said, some of the other schools that had 4 were MIT and Stanford. So I always try to take it and turn some of the stories back to academics. So people realize it's just not athletics, it's academics. So now, as I do a lot of stuff around the country, people will come up to me, which just happened this past weekend, to say, Jim, Clemson is on such a roll, and we know it's just not football. We know it's academics. We know it's research. We know it's facilities. We know it's the quality of students, the quality of faculty. People know it's much more. But if we're all moving the same way, Dabo wins, university wins. University wins, it helps Dabo. It's a win-win. Mm-hmm. It's easier for us to help him recruit because of our academic rankings. You know, it's easier for us to get great faculty and staff and students because he's winning on the field. So if you do it right, there's a lot of wins on every part of the family. So his impact goes way beyond football. And I think it's in the community. And a lot of people ask me what separates Clemson from other schools, Larry. Culture here is special. And it has been special. And if you can go back historically in this institution, and you know the institution, the culture's been special. It's been a little different. But I think it's gone to another level. And Dabo's impact is huge. Huge.
Can you think of a better fit of a coach and university?
Nowhere in the country.
In the community?
No. He's exactly where he needs to be, exactly where he's supposed to be, and exactly where hopefully he'll be for a very long time. I agree with Dabo, and I'm the same way. I don't want to win it the wrong way. You got to win it the right way. People always ask me, is he really like the way he seems? That's really who he is. Yeah. Like, I know him on the field, off the field, in the community, at church. That's him. You know, there's no fake. That's Dabo.
Yeah.
And he's just rare. In this business, he is a rare breed and special for a lot of reasons. And let me tell you what, something else you put in that article. Kathleen is special, too.
Yeah.
And she's kind of quiet behind the scenes, but she plays a major role in recruiting and making the players feel loved and supported and appreciated. And, you know, his family reflects the Clemson family. You know, just good people taking care of each other. I think we're now the envy of, and I think, Larry, it goes beyond football. There were a lot of people around the country after we won the national championship last year, emails and texts that I got, that pretty much said, you know, you guys have become like the model institution. Great academics, great athletics, you do things the right way, you got a great culture. So, you know, we're on a roll.
These are colleagues of yours from other?
Colleagues, friends, people from around the country, yeah. It's a pretty cool time to be here. And, you know, the thing is, if you think about this, he would always say the best is yet to come. And in 2016, you're like, how can it be? We just won a national championship. You know, come on.
Deshaun's leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the next year, we get 7 players who are the number one player in their state. Mm-hmm. And they still say the best is yet to come. You're like, the lower you can't be. And this year, the recruiting class, you know, some will say it could be the best, like in the history of college football. But they're all great student athletes. They're great people. They're going to graduate, and they're going to do well.
Okay, that was fun. Really appreciate those folks sitting down with us. I guess it was in September. Plenty more to come. I said earlier in the podcast at the beginning, we might do it later this week. I have now decided we are going to do it later this week. So not sure if it'll be Thursday or Friday, but stay tuned. We got some really, really good stuff. I think as good as these first interviews were, as Dabo likes to say, the best is yet to come. So happy 50th to the head man. Thanks to our sponsors for playing such a key role in making this happen, particularly our title sponsor, Parham Smith and Archenhold Law Firm in downtown Greenville. Most of all, thanks to all of you for making this a part of your listening routine. Cheers.